Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
All right, hey y'all. It is 5 o'clock on Monday and we are stealing beer. I'm Augie Carton. We have a whole group of guests. Kennedy's here, but off mic, filling in for John Hull.
You want to introduce yourself?
It's Ben Keen.
I know.
A beer advocate.
I'm just trying to, I'm going to have these guys say their own last names.
Oh, okay.
So I was trying to figure out if I want to say Ben and see if there was a cute way to present the last name presentation, but it's Philly Beer Week. We're at Craft Brewers Conference. It's not Philly Beer Week. It's Craft Brewers Conference in Philadelphia. Philly Beer Week is in 3 weeks, right? So
yeah.
This is Craft Brewers Conference, and we have some craft brewers here. Guys, I actually recently collaborated with, so I will introduce them as Sean from Alpine and Evan from Green Flash, and you guys will tell them your own last names and titles and whatever that is, but if you want one, I'm not a title guy, but what do they call you guys over there?
Honorifics.
Honorifics, yeah, that's what I mean. Thank you.
I think we're both head brewers.
Both head brewers of your respective brewers. That's fine. I like head brewer.
Yeah.
I think that's a fine title. Let's go with that. Head brewers of respective breweries. So we all just did a beer, and it's called Ron's Steam Bock Haircut, a very fanciful, silly name. I love the beer. I love the beer you guys made. I like the beer we made. I like how they're different. There's a shocking difference just in systems and efficiencies, man. Ours is browner. You know what I mean? It's exactly the same recipe, but 15-barrel system versus amazing, modern, big-ass system. Still a little shocked.
So for people who don't know what happened, you brewed a beer.
All right, so
in Jersey.
This is how this collaboration works. All collaborations are different. We have a friend named Ron who grew up in our part of the world, who moved to San Diego and does QC for Green Flash. Does he handle that for the Alpine beers too now? I don't know how merged everything is.
The Alpine beer is being produced in Mira Mesa. I believe he's
the QC
yes.
guy.
Yeah.
Right on. So that makes sense. So theoretically, he handles all the beers. And he's an old friend of ours. But he basically was a guy that said, I want you guys to all brew together. And obviously, for me, that's fine. Alpine, you know, I came out to your place 4 or 5 years ago. And Green Flash IPA is a foundation IPA for me. So it wasn't hard to get me into it. But basically, he sent an email with all of us on it, said, let's make a beer. And one of you guys kicked out, let's do a MyBox, since it's going to be May and we're all going to be in Philly together. I was very happy with that. And then Sean got involved, and Sean handles hops better than most brewers. So I was asked what I thought. And I said, well, I like minty hops on MyBox. But I'm not gonna push that forward. And then we had a couple hop ideas, and let's see what's available, what's fun. And we ended up going with a very better nugget than we get. Like, I mostly use nugget for bittering, and that was a beautiful dry hopping hop. So
yeah, lots of citrus character coming out of it.
Real pretty.
Not really conducive to most other nugget experiences.
Yep, it's a much better nugget than Carton has available to us through our guys.
Yeah, we're doing a single hop.
Yeah, it's a super pretty hop. And I like that top pretty, because another one of my first beers up there with the Green Flash IPA is Nugget Nectar.
Yeah,
and
I was just going to say.
And I think the Nugget crop has variation that shows in Nugget Nectar, because it's a religious, you know, it's a thing. And it's a good indicator, and it's how I came to it. But I don't think anybody else uses it real well, and I've often blamed that on the hop and not on the brewers. And it wasn't until I had those nuggets with you guys that I was like, oh, maybe it is the brewers. Maybe people aren't handling this hop right.
Yeah, it could be a combination of both.
Yeah, it could be. I guess it could be. But so we did that. And then basically the emails went back and forth. We all looked at a recipe. We all agreed. You guys piloted it. I came out, drank the pilot. We agreed. Everything was what we wanted it to be. So then it was brewed on the big system there. Carton wasn't originally going to brew it. It was just going to be something we did out there. But after I tasted it and was so happy with it, I really wanted my guys to have a shot at it, because it was such a fun brew and such a fun brew. So we came back, and I kicked some beer out of rotation. For those of you that follow Carton, the reason you don't have hop pun in cans right now is because I did this beer in that beer spot. we'll figure it out. But so that was how it happened. Okay. And then we've all brewed it. We canned it, and I have it here to give you guys, but awesome. It's only in Jersey, really. And you guys brought some kegs here for the event, right? So you guys are pouring your version of it here in Philly, and then my version of it's across the Delaware and Jersey.
Right.
That's the collaboration.
It's really
part.
Simple.
So let's talk. I'm going to start on Sean, because Craft Brewers Conference was in San Diego how long ago, guys? 4 years ago? All right. So 4 years ago, we came out, we went right to Alpine. Well, actually, we went right to Green Flesh, and then we went right to Alpine. One trip. Met you, had a couple beers, the old brewery did all that. But I got from you a case of Bombers, half Duet, half...
Probably Nelson or Pure Hoppiness?
I don't think it was Nelson. It was Nelson, because we have a guy at home, Joe Boyle, who... Nelson. We make a Nelson-hopped version of our double just for his bar because of his love of your Nelson beer.
Awesome.
Like, that's... He's insane about your beer. He kills me about it. Finally, I was like, fine, Joe. Shut up. I will make you a Nelson beer. So 07750 is the Nelson dry-hopped version of our double because of your beer for his bar. And he sells it more than anybody sells anything. But so I brought that one home. But... You know, in this world of people insisting that hoppy beers need to be consumed right fucking away, I'm very much against that. I don't disagree that there are ones that are made to be fresh and they fall off soon. But IPAs, the origin of the beers should be long-lasting beers and should be well done. And they should integrate and they should evolve and they should get pretty. Well, I still have the last two bottles of that case of
More
Duet.
Years.
In my cellar. My cellar is a 55-degree wine cellar with no light. And I open one a year, and it's the prettiest, lightest. It's just, it's such a fine beer. Because that beer, when it's new, is a ham-fisted, you know, it's a big, hoppy IPA. It's, I don't know if you've ever done it, but I use you as the explanation. People are like, well, you got to drink it fresh. I'm like, no, you fucking don't. And if you have the patience and you do
it
right.
It's a four-year-old beer.
But four-year-old IPA and one of the hoppiest IPAs in the world. I just put it away and let it go, and I'd love to check in on it. And I've given it to people in these black glasses just to fuck with them. And, you know, nobody guesses it at IPA because it's all integrated, but it's a gorgeous beer. People love it. So let's talk about that. Do you have that in mind when you guys are building your beers? Do you plan for them to age? Or, you know, because both of you guys make gorgeous hoppy beers. Closer. We can't hear you.
We want some shelf stability, but ultimately we're not designing
it. But nobody that
long. Especially for Alpine beers, because it doesn't really sit on the shelf in San Diego.
Yeah, no, that's the idea. So.
Damn, beer's that beer's meant to be dank drank. As fuck. Yeah, beer's meant to be drank, I agree, but I feel like I learn a lot more about a beer properly stored. I don't know, it's just the way I drink. But I drink old wine, too. Like, wines people don't age, I age.
Yeah.
But so, the Duet, let's talk about that beer. Let's talk about what it was when you first made it what you wanted it to be and what fun you guys have had moving it over and making it together.
Well, got to give credit where credit is due. These are that Nelson and Duet originally were my dad's recipes.
Okay.
He's, you know, founder of Alpine Beer Company. He's the one that started this whole thing. The idea was a couple new hops a long time ago. He thought they worked very well together with Duet, and
he was
just
right.
Went for it. it's done pretty good for us. And, you know, starts with a good grain bill, nice and clean, just enough malt character to carry the hops through.
Yeah, I love it. But and I think that malt character is why it ages better than some, right? You don't age every beer,
right?
But if it hits all 4 points, then I like to see what happens to it.
Yeah.
But how? Tell the process of moving, because if I imagine not everybody's been to both breweries. I'm lucky to have been, but. You went from one of the most hobbled together, like when you read the books about 1960s California brewing, milk, you know, repurposed milk and this and that. It's a pretty little system.
Yeah.
Pretty little system, but it is a tiny system jammed into essentially a hallway.
Yeah, we don't got a lot of room there.
Now, when you guys, when the two breweries teamed up or partnered up, how much fun was it? What was the weirdness of moving from that system to one of the glorious, like, your system over at Green Flash. I mean, it's just, you know, internal calandra and all these fucking toys that just give you control that, that you want when you're a little guy in a closet.
It's the turbo brew house.
She's a beaut.
Sorry?
She's a beaut.
Oh, she's gorgeous. She's
absolutely
glorious. But
very
what,
efficient.
So what was, what did, but would you say too efficient, right? Like, have you had to kind of anti-engineer to keep it from making your beers too pretty?
A little bit, yeah. I feel like the hop utilization in the brew house at Mira Mesa is much more efficient than what we're dealing with up at Alpine. Our, I don't know, now 30-year-old pub 10-barrel brew system is... It makes beer.
Yeah, it definitely makes beer. I've never had a bad beer off it. Man, I love the first time I saw it. I was like, you really make... Because of Joe Boyle, like, we got your beers regularly. He I guess there's some horse race or something out by you guys that he does annually. And he would hit Delmar Green Flash. He would literally hit your two breweries and bring them back to us. Yeah. And Green Flash got to New York quite well. I would say one of the things you guys do best is... Your beer gets to New York fresher than all the other West Coast beer. I don't know why. I don't know how. I'm talking keg beer, but
I know our VP of sales is from New York. So
is that what it is? Well, it definitely works for you guys because I drink. You know, I do 40% of my drinking in the city, and I know all those beers on the West Coast. And Green Flash is one of the few that makes it at least to New York City. As it is in San Diego.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not one that falls off. Good. But which is why it was so... It wasn't until Curtin Brewing was 3 years old that Green Flash IPA dropped off my top five beers on what's the clicky thing I do?
Untapped.
Like Green Flash IPA.
No, the clicky thing.
Was above most of my beers. And I check into my beers when I do events. Yeah. And it just held that spot, but a lot of it was how fresh and good and just pretty it was. It's a great IPA. Yeah. All right, so let's get back to it. So you guys join forces to produce more. You're making some, all...
Yeah, how does that work?
Yeah.
So, wow, there's probably five, maybe six beers that are being produced year-round at Green Flash now.
Happy birthday, which is your session, right. Which is awesome.
Yep.
Duet.
Nelson.
Nelson has some rye in it, right?
Yeah, about 20%.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's up there. new to the market will be Mandarin Nectar and Willy Vanilli, vanilla wheat beer.
Nice.
Set for
nobody
packaging.
Used that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how the hell has no one claimed Willy Vanilli yet?
It just happened.
Well done, TM motherfucker. TM.
Yep. Started out with our wheat beer, named after my uncle Willy. Then my dad decided, hey, let's throw some vanilla in there. And this was kind of like our gateway beer for people that, you know, not really into beer or craft beer or. It's a good introduction.
Yeah, wheat like and vanilla.
Gene would love that.
Gene would definitely love that. If I didn't say it, we're at the say it the way he wants us to say it.
Fermenteria.
I keep calling it the Fermentaria. But that's Fermenteria. We're at the Fermenteria.
The firm.
The Tired the firm. Hands Fermenteria in Ardmore, Pennsylvania is hosting us. And I should move on to the beer. Keen, you're not as good as Hall at yelling at me that we should talk about the beer.
Damn it, Augie.
We're deep in it. Okay, so we're back. We have a very defensive system. I got shouted at. The system decided to protect me. You can shout at other people, but if you shout at Augie Carton, this thing goes completely dead.
Got it.
It's one of the fail safes built in the system. So what brings us together, what facilitates this conversation, is the black glasses of beer. Keen and I have been served blind beers. We're in opaque glasses. We can't see color. We don't know what we're drinking. You guys brought it. Do you guys know each of you brought one beer, or together you brought two beers?
Yeah.
All right.
We know more.
But it's neither of your beers.
Nope. Correct.
And it smells. So I like to say, when people ask me about styles and regions, I like to say really good American IPAs smell like weed.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
If they're made right.
And if there's regionality to them, they smell like what that region smokes. And a San Diego IPA is different than a San Francisco IPA, is different than a Portland IPA, is different than a Vermont IPA, different than a Boulder IPA. And you'll notice, if you look at Leafly, the five IPA styles I just listed are also five important cities for the smell of weed. So I am in no way shocked that you guys brought me an IPA.
There's a Venn diagram there that
you've I'm telling you, there is a cross over in the middle there that is those are the styles. And everybody's like, well, you know, you could talk about using softer wheats, you know, softer malts in Vermont. You could talk about water, but really I think people make IPAs that smell like their weed. And so I'm not surprised you motherfuckers brought me an IPA that smells exactly like weed. It's lovely.
Actually not an IPA.
No, but you know what I mean. A hopped beer that smells exactly like...
Yeah, like, yeah. How do you guys do this? I'm trying to guess what we brought you.
No, we don't guess. We just talk... So basically, the idea here is... So John Hall and I are neighbors. He's a reporter. He's an old school newsman. Justin Kennedy produces another one of these podcasts called Beer Sessions Radio with Jimmy Carboni. It's very good. And I'm a brewer, and the three of us ended up in company together a bunch. And when the three of us hung out and talked, we had conversations I thought the world should hear, like we have when we're standing around your brewery, where there's a part of craft brewing that's trying to take itself way too seriously and making all this, you know, and it's not good or bad. It's just not what's interesting to me. And I figured that if we got those conversations recorded and people saw us talking about beer, you know, too many people frame their conversation of beer for what it isn't. Like, I wanted it to be this, or this should be this, or it's not this, or it didn't blow my hair back, or
it doesn't all fit these, in the style guidelines.
All these different ways of talking about beer and where beer is at this amazing time. All these amazing people are making amazing beers, but it's still just beer. And what we were trying to do was make the conversation, or at least share the conversation we're having. Hall edits a big thing. We get to hang out with guys like Keen and you guys. And those conversations, I thought, were just much better for beer than trying to make beer as important as wine or not, and trying to make and all that shit. So that's what Steal This Beer was meant to be. Yeah. And then the facilitation for that is these black glasses, because when you're completely blind to what it is, all you can talk about is what it is. You know what I mean? Not what it isn't. Because you don't know what it's supposed to be. You don't even know what color it is. You can't bring anything to it.
Right.
So that was the beginning of it. And now it's become, that's what it is. So we taste it, we talk about what it is, and then we write a sentence where we would want this beer in our life. So with some very small exceptions, somebody handed me that Not Your Father's Ginger Ale last week, and that had no place in my life, and it went away. But, man, that's a fucking terrible beverage.
Isn't it?
But
I get the wheat thing, but I also get, like, a little
but it's,
grapiness.
It smells like somebody's 1986 Honda Civic with a fish sticker on the back. Like, it smells...
That's fair. That's fair.
Yep.
I do like it, though. Yeah, the malt character, it's pretty. It's
very light. Yeah. Almost like...
A little bit of sweetness, just a little high tone... You've already said it's not an IPA, so now I'm trying to figure out what style it's going to be called.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got decisive bitterness. It's real crisp. It's a drinking beer. It's definitely boozy, though.
Belgian. In the Belgian family. With the, I get that.
Is it Orval?
It is not Orval.
But Orval trips up this show a lot.
Yeah.
We've had people bring in a bunch of Orval. Every time I love it, and every time Hall hates it. And Hall's the editor of All About Beer, and Orval's Orval, and... If you ask Hall his favorite beers, he'll put Orval on the top 10, but somehow
every time he gets handed,
he's like so vegetal, and he gets mad at it, and then they tell us it's Orval.
Brian Strumke.
And it's Strumke. all right, so I think I'm drinking this with you guys. I'm glad you brought it.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't even know if it's a San Diego beer, and it's
not.
Okay if it is, and it's probably not, but I feel like if we were out doing that bike riding around the beach thing that I do with Ron when I visit you guys, and we stop somewhere, and this was given to me on that pretty dry 82-degree day you guys get to have almost every day.
Every day.
You know, like, when I was out, when we brewed, it was raining, which made most of you people nuts. I was like, what's wrong, guys? This isn't even bad rain. It's 80 degrees.
The sky is falling.
It's not typical San Diego weather.
No, it's but I like it. I I would drink the shit out of this. And I like that it finishes, it almost finishes like a Pilsner hoppiness, right? That kind of sticky bitterness.
Yep.
Like if you were drinking your dad's beers all day on a summer day.
Mm-hmm. It's like a Belgian pale or a strong golden or something in that.
But where are you
vein.
Drinking it, Ben? Yep.
I would want to
be drinking. Where does our upstate New York native drink this? What is this, a shoveling snow beer? What kind of
beer? I feel like,
is
you know what? I liked, so the opening of CBC was at the Art Museum the other night, right? And you could walk around the galleries, except they wouldn't let you bring beer in there. I feel like...
You can't drink it there.
Yeah.
What? What the fuck does beer do to 500-year-old oil paint? It just rinses right off. It might as well be linoleum.
But this would be, if you were allowed to bring a glass into those galleries and check out that cool shit, like this would be a beer that you can kind of take little nips of it. You're walking around slowly, appreciating all this ancient, you know, hundreds of years old artwork. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
So you're thinking it's a Belgian single, just heavily hopped.
That would be my guess, but we don't play the guessing game.
I guess
so.
No. I just there's some clovey spiciness that I wasn't getting till now, which could speak to that yeast. The
some
sweetness
of that phenolic
is,
stuff starts to pop out. Yeah.
Exactly. All
right. I'm very happy with it. So you guys brought it.
It's good.
Yeah. What is it?
It's Duvel.
It's Duvel? Yeah. Right on.
Of course.
That makes perfect fucking sense.
Yeah.
So it's, you know what though? When people ask me, when guys ask you questions that can't possibly be answered without 50 more sentences, like,
yep.
I'm going to, you know, this restaurant, what do I drink? I want a beer. Duvel's one of those, right? Like, everything we just talked about, there's no food this thing's not going to handle.
Yeah.
And I just can't believe how hoppy it is. Do we know what the date is? Like, how fresh is it? Because that's... I feel like mostly when I drink Duvel, it's on...
The Best Buy is 2017.
Right.
So it's got to be pretty new. There's no way they have a... Do you think they go out past 2 years on their Best Buy?
I don't think so.
So it's fresh.
No. Yeah.
It must be the format. I don't think
did you buy it here in Philly, or did you guys bring it from San Diego? All right. So, yeah, Philly does an amazing job of getting beers that none of the rest of us get.
Yeah.
And fresh and good. Yeah. Like,
it's like
good.
It's kind of difficult to actually find a place that was selling bottles of beer.
Single bottles.
This morning.
You can find wine and you know,
spirits, Philly's got some real... Well, Pennsylvania. I'm saying Philly, but I mean the whole state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Has a really dumb fucking... You have to buy a case.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about.
What's that all about? Sometimes I don't want, you know, 12 beers.
I don't want to get super political, but I feel like on the East Coast, Jersey, Pennsylvania, let's call it the original 13 colonies, coming out of Prohibition, our corrupt bootleggers were a lot more politically involved than the rest of the world's corrupt bootleggers.
Now it all makes sense.
I think if you really want to understand the local laws and policies, you've got to look at the fact that Nookie Thompson from Boardwalk Empire was very involved in deciding what the laws were going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very strangely protective of distributors and their rights.
Right.
And if you want to, because that's who that is, right? Distributors are those bootleggers now made legal and given jobs. And they were very involved in the politics, and they wrote these laws that protect them. And let's face it, if you can buy a mixed case, you can buy from 7 distributors. If you can only buy one case, you're only buying from one distributor. And I don't know that that's true, and it's now 70 years later, and all the laws have been muddied, but every time I'm trying to make sense of the regional laws on beer, if you put yourself in the mind of the bootlegging mobster... The laws fit him best.
It's the logical answer. Yeah.
And to be fair, HBO probably deserves all credit for that, because I was actually watching like season 5 of Boardwalk Empire. I was like, oh fuck, of course Nookie wrote the laws. Like, Nookie's in the middle of handing a senator some giant amount of cash because they're going to make booze legal again, and that's going to put Nookie out of business. And then you look at New Jersey's beer laws, you're like, oh.
It's all coming together.
Well done, Mr. Thompson. Well done. You guys are out in the Wild West, though. You guys have, like,
it's a little bit different.
But we've already talked about Greenfest's distribution here and how well that goes. But it's much more libertarian, for lack of a better word, in the West, in California too, right? What are the rules out there? You guys can you sell through distributors, right? You can't sell yourself. Like, you can't sell to bars, right? Or you could.
We can.
We can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have. That's how we started, actually, right. Is, you know, direct to the bars.
See, I come to you guys after Joe Boyle turns me on to you guys. So let's say 8 years ago.
Okay.
But by then, I just think everybody just made the drive and took the beer out of the closet.
That's how it
right?
happened. That was, yeah. Yeah.
That's how I envisioned getting your beers.
Yep.
Gentlemen.
More beer?
We need more beer. Right on. And what about Greenflesh? So Greenflesh is how old now? 20 years?
14.
They started actually, what, a year or two maybe before Alpine Beer Company was founded?
Okay.
And in the meantime, a couple years before that, my dad actually essentially contract brewed from Alesmith. So from 99 to 2001, I believe, he was making Alpine beer at Alesmith.
Okay.
And he had volunteered enough of his time there. Skip Virgilio, the owner at the time, said, "Oh, you want to make some beer? Okay, you can have that fermenter, and you can have this 5 square feet in the cold box.
And that's
do your
Alpine.
Thing." Yeah,
and that's wow. Alpine.
And
that's
it was just like a handshake kind of deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's awesome. In that time, brewery had shut their doors in downtown San Diego, a place that actually Chuck Silva, former brewmaster of Green Flash, had worked, Hang Ten Brewing Company. My dad was good friends with the owner, talked to him, said, "What are you doing with the equipment?" "Oh, we've got a bid. Somebody wants to buy it." He said, "How much?" And came in a couple more dollars above that original bid and got the brew system. And
put it into the weirdest building in the universe.
Oh, it was amazing. We had to take out this big bay window and have a couple guys with a forklift. And
push them in.
Put everything into place and started cranking out beers that made about 500 barrels of beer a year for the first 4 years or so.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I love it.
It was right around 2006, 7, 8, I can't even remember now, when Green Flash had moved from their Vista location to where they are now in Mira Mesa, they were getting rid of their now undersized equipment, and we picked up 4 of their 20 barrel fermenters, which
for you is
tripled our production.
Unbelievable.
It was great.
Yeah.
And I think, now we did, Beer Advocate did a story on your dad. I think it was 2008.
Mm-hmm.
You were a year, maybe 2 years into the business, and already people were making that drive, like you said, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, finding their way.
Joe Boyle, So I'll give Joe Boyle a little love because he's, you know, he was our mule, if you will, to use the Beer Advocate parlance. But Boyle's is so, again, going back to Jersey and the weirdness, there's only 7,000 liquor licenses in New Jersey, and that's a finite set number. It can't change.
Wow.
So the liquor licenses have this weird value and all that. But within those, there's a couple of very strange grandfathered prohibition speakeasy liquor stores. Boyle's is one of them. There's a place called Murphy's. There's one in Montclair. They're all kind of cool, but they're always in a house. They're always in a neighborhood. They're literally just, Boyle's is a blue siding house in a neighborhood.
That is weird. That's some weird.
It's amazing. And there's a neon in the window, and Murphy's is, so Boyle's actually has some property, like it's a nice house in a town with yards. Murphy's in Rumson is like a bungalow, like a fisherman's bungalow, and you can almost reach the houses next to it, and it just happens to be a bar with a liquor license. But the thing I've learned again as I pay attention is you're always within 2 blocks of the local police station when you're in these bars.
Of course.
So, in my opinion, these are the local cops saying, "Well, you got to give Joey a liquor license."
Yeah.
Right? Like, we can't, if we're looking at these liquor licenses, the guy we bought our beer from for all of Prohibition has to get one.
Yeah.
So
cops got to drink too.
That's how these go. So, Boyle's is exactly 2 blocks from
the police
station.
Telling me that you guys have your anniversary.
We have our anniversary there every year. That's another Joe Boyle story where the beer wasn't to be sold yet. It was delivered to be sold tomorrow. And he said, "No, I'm tapping it. Go fuck yourself. I'm a speakeasy. I come out of Prohibition." I was like, fair enough. But so he was the first guy to tap a keg. So he's the guy that gets the anniversary every year. But anyway, the reason I brought up is it's right behind the police station. It's this little place. his family bought it from the family that had it out of Prohibition in like 1940 or 50. Mm-hmm. His dad had it. His dad famously decided that the local Bud distributor was an asshole in 1974 and kicked him out. He hasn't served Bud since 1974 or any of their products. And locally, Bud and Guinness somehow merged distributor-wise. So Guinness just got kicked out for joining Bud. Literally 32 years later, this is who this guy is.
I love it.
He's adamant. He has zero fucks to give. Yeah. He's in a house. He closes the last week of August because he doesn't like Benny's, which are summer tourists.
Yeah.
And he's in a beach town, right? Like every other business in the world is like you know, that's their
money,
week,
yeah.
And he just doesn't want to be bothered. So he's the perfect guy.
Yeah,
but he loves craft beer. He did the Sierra Beer Camp and all that. He's a guy that was moving your beers. But why did I even start this story? I've gotten so involved in Joe, I can't stop talking about Joe.
I was waiting to find out.
But there
was
a reason I started. It was something we were talking about with
Boyle's Muling Beer.
No. But he was bringing your beers out. But again, so this is the adamant nature of his thing. But he's the guy who said, try this beer. And I think it's something to do with the horse race that you guys have in San Diego, which must be important because he'd go out for that week. He goes sit, and when we got there, you had one of our tin tackers over the bar.
Sure did.
That he brought out there, and I was like, well, this is fucking cool. That was one of the first carton maybe at OK Brewery moments. All right, so let's talk about beer number two, which we are on.
Oh, yeah.
It's
malty.
Yeah, it's got like candy
sweet
sugar. Like I don't want to do Velas here again.
Uh-huh.
But it's got like that special B candy, you know, Belgian candy flavor to it. So
nailed it. Yeah.
If you told me this was a double, or even a quad, I'd say okay.
Yep.
There is a vanilla. There's a vanilla tone to it that makes me think maybe it's on a bourbon barrel, but it's not.
Yeah.
Bourbon boozy.
No.
It's bourbon vanilla-y, not bourbon boozy.
This beer was aged in bourbon barrels for a very short period of time.
It doesn't smell boozy enough to get up to a quad to me, but
yeah.
I'm just...
No, but it's got that those pretty...
Raisiny,
yeah, that special B,
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call it a stout.
Sugar.
Yeah.
Brown sugar.
Brulee, like the top of creme brulee.
Yes.
Exactly. Sean's making
this
very sexy faces.
Yeah, we haven't had this either. So. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, you've never tried this beer.
Yeah.
And you like it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Smiling a lot. So.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
I'm getting drunk. I haven't eaten today.
Neither have I,
neither.
Which is always a mistake. CBC is the worst week ever.
Yeah, we have a saying, though. We never eat on an empty stomach. So, get some beers. We'll be okay.
Here's the thing. This beer is slutty. I don't disrespect it. I think it's pretty. But it's... doing all those, it's got its shirt pulled off its shoulder, maybe the bra strap's fallen open.
Winking at you a little bit.
There's definitely Def Leppard or Bon Jovi on.
Right.
And we're in somebody's basement, and this beer is just trying to make sure I'm happy that it's there. It's hitting all those notes. It's not good. I'm not being mean to it, but
right.
it's definitely like what turns guys on.
Right.
Check the vanilla bourbon box, check the sugar box, check the alcohol box.
Yeah.
But all that being said, that what I was calling the special beer or candy sugar thing,
mm-hmm.
I think is what gives it its niceness, right? Like you said brulee, where there's that burnt edge to the sweetness that gives it a little character that makes it not flabby.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I like
so I don't disrespect it.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be disrespecting it.
Right.
You're right. It's not too much, but it's just vanilla.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean, like
in a good way.
I don't want to be mean to it, but it's trying so hard to make me happy. I almost disrespect that it's making me happy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Put some clothes on.
Yeah.
Put some clothes
it.
On.
Least.
This beer actually came from Brazil.
It's got like I'm thinking Heath
really?
Bar.
Yeah,
like
Heath Bar's
a little touch of chocolate, but more of the toffee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It
definitely doesn't taste as strong as it is.
I know
how strong it is.
Is it super nuts?
No, nothing crazy.
Because it tastes to me like it's 11. At least 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so where are we drinking this? This is you bring this to the throat beards, right? This is the one where... This is the one where
lay this at the foot of the throat beard king.
We say neck beards, but
yeah. This is I think the right term is neck beards, but that's why I have to say throat beards. Right?
I love it.
Augie Carton has to make it a little more wrong.
I love it.
But But yeah, this is there's definitely somebody with a mouse in his right hand and this beer in his left. And
and mouse is not a euphemism?
Not in this case, no.
Okay.
But yeah, this oh, there's somewhere somebody's so delighted with how much they love this beer. Like the same thing that makes me kind of, it's funny that I'm dismissing it because it's kind of perfect for checking happy boxes, but I'm like, yeah, it's not hard to like that. So
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Like, it doesn't suck.
I hate to be that guy. It's really nice. It's really, really nice. And it's doing everything right.
Yeah.
And it's not, you're right. At 11%, it's the right amount of booze, right? Because it's definitely a spirituous beer without being fucking hot.
Yeah. It's not hitting you over the head with the barrel character. You know, it's,
is this from Colorado?
It's from Brazil.
He said it was from Brazil.
Colorado, the brewery.
Well, we haven't written a sentence.
There's a brewery in Brazil, a pretty big one, called Colorado.
Oh, I had no idea. No, I don't think it's from there.
Yeah.
That's meta.
Cervejaria. I can't pronounce
it. Cervejaria. That's how you say it.
Easy for you to say.
Well, it's probably Cervejaria.
Yeah, Cervejaria.
Cervejaria.
just lost our Brazilian listeners.
No, but Brazil, they speak Portuguese.
Portuguese,
and the worst part is Portuguese is the ugliest language in the world, but the Brazilians speak it pretty. But if you're in Portugal, every Portuguese word ends with "z." Like they literally, every word is like, it'd be cerveja. But in Brazil, they pretty it up a little. All right, so you got to write your sentence, and then somebody has to tell me what this beer is.
Where am I drinking this? That's hard. I don't know. I feel like, you know, you said this was a slutty beer, so
it's
a
slutty beer. And now that it's Brazilian, it's a big butt slutty beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
No, I feel like you're in
Rio,
there
you're,
is feathers and body paint going on with this version.
You're in a basement listening to bad music on like
Def Leppard. This is Bon Jovi. This gives love a bad name. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and you're somebody's on your lap. Probably someone's on your lap, and you're in like some kind of
oh my god, it's called Trojan
leather armchair.
Literally, Trojan. Just in case it goes to that place.
Yeah,
it's called Trojan. Do they have a Ramses and a Sheik as well?
I couldn't tell you. It's my first experience with this beer and the brewery. So the brewer, the packaging manager at Green Flash. Has gone down to this place and done a collaboration beer.
We've done a couple.
The brewers are in town.
Who?
Chris Weber.
Yeah, Webbs. Yeah. All right, cool. Because I know when we're very friendly. I like Weber a lot.
Yeah.
But we're Facebook friends, so I know when he was there.
Right.
Because he was all over. Yeah, no, he looked very happy.
Yeah.
For those of you who ever get to meet Chris Weber, very chill, very cool dude, very California.
Absolutely.
He liked Brazil. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry, but Weber's a very cool cat.
So this is from those guys that he has brewed collaboration with before.
Yeah. Right on.
Is it called Seasons Brewing?
Seasons Brewing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it's
good
got,
folks.
And it's got
a barley wine.
It's a barley wine.
I wouldn't peg it as a barley wine on
me
taste.
Neither.
Yeah.
I just went to read the words on the side so we'd know things, and it's in Portuguese.
It is.
So I saw was
that's
right. A taste. So I'm really happy about that. So we recently had
I'm excited to try their Magnum next.
Yeah. Right.
Magnum.
Yes. Yeah, it tastes like rubber.
I've heard good things.
It's chewy. All right. Hey, sorry about that. Brian's clearly not paying attention, and he's going to tell me it wasn't his fault. But clearly, Brian Cass of IDrinkGoodBeer.com is just not handling the up and down across the crossfader right now. But we are back again from Enteria Steal This Beer. We are hanging out with our brothers from San Diego, and we're up to no good. So what I was saying was, I feel like Saturday Night Live has a skit where a group of like Germans is trying to do an American sitcom. And, you know, or things like that where just the jokes fall flat or they land on the wrong side and all that. Mm-hmm. The last Brazilian beers that came on the show were kind of that. They weren't bad, but they didn't feel natural to the brewers. It felt like they were, and it's not the story, but it just felt like they were aping American things and not nailing them. To be fair, Americans ape American things and don't nail them. So this isn't a bad thing, but you know what I mean? It was... It just, it felt like things were done to the beer that shouldn't have been done to the beer because somebody thought they should be done to the beer.
Yeah.
Whereas that, I really think that's a super pretty beer. Like that beer, I think that beer tastes exactly the way that beer should taste.
I agree.
For all the things that were done to it. And I think that that's a lovely beer. If you guys can find it, it's called Trojan and it's by Seasons.
Yeah.
And it's a better barley wine than most people are giving me these days. Barley wine.
Thank God.
Do you guys make barley wines? Do you have barley wines? I wish barley wines were cooler.
We actually make one. And
we're
pretty pretentious with it. We call it great. We've made it four times now.
Okay, so philosophically, because of the name, and I know there's an American hopped version and a British not hopped version, but philosophically what I want to do is take the things in beer that remind me of wine. So a warm ferment on Chico or a couple of the British yeasts. Maris Otter.
Yep.
Like, I would probably use, one of those grapey, boring, real old world hops.
Yep.
And just put it in a new wine barrel and age it and try to make something like a wine out of it. That'd be me.
Right.
Because it's called barley wine.
Makes sense.
But that's not what everybody does. Like, what's your barley wine? What's its born? How's it born? What is it?
100% two-row malt. We do a double mash. Pain in the ass. We do a 3.5-hour boil. I think I cut it down to 3 hours last time.
Jesus. Where does it end gravity-wise?
We start at about...
Now, wait. Have you ever done this on the Green Flesh System, or this has only been done on yours?
No.
I was
going
to say, because with the Calandria, you could get that beer to the same gravity, 8 seconds? Nine seconds?
Our barley wine is kind of the same. We do 3-hour boil.
But with the Calandria and, like...
Wow.
Yeah.
It's wow.
So how
same.
Much do you move the sugar? Say an hour and a boil to 3 hours. How much reduction do you get? Like, how much bigger is it?
I think after boiling it for that long, we're sitting at a gravity of about 28, 29 Play-Doh, somewhere around there.
All right. Wow.
We've actually got it to attenuate pretty good. So drops to a pretty low gravity.
Moves through, like, say, 80% of that.
Which is great.
That's awesome.
And then do you barrel it?
Yeah. So... the beer that comes out of the fermenter is good, and then we put it in the barrels.
It becomes great.
The barrels are they spirit barrels or are they wine barrels?
They're bourbon barrels.
California boys have way too many barrel options. I'm always jealous.
We started with Jack Daniels, and then we moved to Heaven Hill.
Okay.
Second batch was 10-year-old Heaven Hill barrels. Then it was 12-year-old Heaven Hill barrels. And this last one, I believe, again, they were Heaven Hill. But they were second use. We had done an Imperial Stout aged in the barrels.
Yeah, because, again, like I wouldn't want too much bourbon like that. I wouldn't want too much bourbon in the in the beer, but it definitely the vanilla thing laid on that real nicely. Now, when you guys do it, what do you guys do differently? I mean, like,
well, Green Flash style, ours is dry hopped.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
We actually dry hop ours, too.
San Diego.
Alpine and Green Flash way, you know, we have to dry hop everything, so...
Yeah.
But these are beers.
Mybox, barley wine.
Hey, have you guys... So now that you guys have made... Yeah, Mybox. So when people ask what the beer is, because there's nothing worse than... All right, I hate everything being called an IPA that has hops in it.
Right.
Because I think hoppy is a good word, and you can just say a hoppy Belgian or a hoppy barley wine or a hoppy anything, so you don't have to call it a Belgian IPA or a...
Yeah.
That's just my own thing, and I think it's better at transferring, and I don't know... it's marketing people telling us brewers how to sell our shit. I know, but that's how everything became an IPA.
There were eye rolls.
But we just made, the three of us just made a Mybach, which is what I would, if somebody asked me, I'd say it's an American Mybach. You know, like that's what we did. We dry hopped it because that's what you guys do. I learned to do it from you guys. That's what I do. Us together, we were going to dry hop it. When people ask what it is, I'm like, well, it's based on a Mybach. We used Cal Common. And we dry hopped it because that's what we do.
Yeah,
and people have actually come at me on some of the meetings, like, why don't you just call it an IPA? And you guys made an IPA, right? Green Flash Alpine Cart, and it's an IPA. I was like, no. If we were going to make an IPA, that would be a really different beer.
Absolutely.
And I just, it's fun because, like, even one of our distributors didn't want it because we called it a Mybach. And
seriously, just the name alone.
Yeah, because they can't sell my box.
Yeah.
Again, distributors. Not that I hate distributors. I love all our distributors.
Yeah, but
I'm telling you,
try?
They didn't. They didn't, and they didn't want to try. Yeah. They wanted it to be good margin and easy to sell. So IPA. So how do we handle the fact that we three, most American brewers, but definitely Cart and Green Flash and Alpine, are going to dry hop anything we touch? How do we fix where the beer world has gotten for it's dry hopped, it's an IPA? How do we get it back? Do we just keep making MyBox when we have the excuse to use each other as the blame for why we didn't make an IPA?
I don't know if there's any other option,
I think that's it.
I think you just don't label it anything.
Right?
You tell me what it is.
You saw our can. We wrote lager on it.
Yeah.
And I had some asshole tell me that it was a lot more like a MyBox than a lager. I was like, first of all,
what?
Let me start with the fact that
a couple of things.
One of these is always the other. The other is, all right. So, all right. Before I go down this political rant and get my warm beer buzz going, Justin Kennedy's going to read us a letter, and we're going to react to it, and we're going to close down the show.
All right. This is from Jeremiah Atkins. He says, "Hey guys, love the show. I've listened to all of them since episode one. I even managed to get a hold of some Bode and O-Dub here in Northern California, thanks to my kick-ass beer thief sister in Jersey City." So Augie teased this in the conversation with Brian Strumke from Stillwater when he saw there was no barcode on the bottle. I don't remember this part of the episode, but anyway, he says, Whole Foods isn't going to like that. Augie said something like, "Oh yeah, we do that sometimes too." But then he trailed off and said, "Hey, somebody ask us this question sometime. What's the difference between a growler can and a production can? Dying to know. Let me know."
All right. That's a good question.
Do you know what he's talking about?
I do know exactly what he's talking about.
Are you talking about crowlers?
No. Crowlers are a terrible thing. Get off crowlers, people. Crowlers are terrible. So anyway, the true answer, it's a carton thing. You guys will understand it, though. It's a Jersey thing, too. Jersey automatically defers to the U.S. TTB for label approval. If they approve it, Jersey will approve it. What we have a label approved for a growler that only needs this image and the warning. So if you're selling it in the brewery, any package just needs to be that label.
Okay.
Right? The label approvals come when you're retailing it. So if we're doing a small batch of something, we don't worry about getting TTB approval for the label.
Yeah.
We call that, even if we're canning it, that's a growler, right? That's what we do. It's a growler can. So if it's something like All Orange Everything, which is a collaboration we just did with Other Half, where we're only going to make it once. We don't want to pay to get the label approved. We're not going to sell it outside the tasting room.
Right.
It is a growler. We just get the growler approval for the name and the recipe, you know, the cola.
Yeah,
and then
we
just call that can a growler, a prepackaged growler.
Perfect.
So that's what he's asking. But when we do that, so there's no confusion, we put the fish that goes on our growler where the barcode would go on our can, because we're not going to register a barcode for something that's never going to be sold in a store.
Yeah.
However, when you do that, so Carton Small, we're only in 30 stores. Whole Foods, when 10 years ago, when none of the local New Jersey liquor stores would sell anything but Bud Light, Whole Foods was the place to get craft. So I have a relationship with Whole Foods that now that everybody sells craft pisses off a bunch of the local liquor stores. But 10 years ago, they were the only guys giving us the beer we wanted. They were the only guys getting us Green Flash, for sure.
Yeah.
So that's what, you know, so that's why we stick to them. But they are also a fucking major American company who needs to get the UPC registered in their, you know, central computer 3 months, and Carton doesn't make beers 3 months out.
No.
So there's a whole bunch of beers Whole Foods can't sell. There's a whole bunch of beers Whole Foods can't sell because we got them the UPC the day we got the beer. Yeah. But so that's what all that discussion was about. And now we're going to tie it up. I'm told we've gone long. I don't think that's true. Mr. Ben Keen, thanks for filling in for
home. Always fun to shoot the shit with you guys.
Perfect. The gentleman of San Diego, the I want to call you the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of our day. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for coming out. Thanks for bringing the beers. They're very fucking cool. I love that Duvel showed up, and I love that I love Duvel. Everybody, do yourself a favor. Go get a fresh bottle of Duvel and drink the fuck out of it.
Yeah, it's a great beer. Surprising. Yeah. Totally underrated.
I think, you know what, I'm rating it pretty high. I really like that beer. Anyway, guys, you know how to reach us. We are at Steal This Beer on everything, and we are stealthisbeer@gmail.com. stealthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com. Get at us. Let us know what you think. Thank you.
Thanks.
And that's the show, boys.